Now, on BBC Radio 4, for the final time in this series, Nicholas Parsons declares...
Welcome to Just a Minute. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country and, of course, around the world, but also to welcome to the programme four exciting and talented personalities who are going to speak with humour and eloquence and style and wit on a subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And those four intrepid players of this game are seated on my right, Paul Merton and Clement Freud, and seated on my left, Tony Hawkes and Giles Brandreth. Will you please welcome all four of them? And seated beside me is Janet Staplehurst, who's going to help me keep the score, and she'll blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Northcote Theatre, in that lovely city of Exeter. And we have an enthusiastic Devonian audience here who love their city. That's why they cheered and laughed then, but they're longing for us to get on with the show. Giles, the subject, New York. What a subject. 60 seconds starting now.
New York isn't Mecca, it just smells like it, said Neil Simon, the distinguished New York playwright. The Bronx, no thonks, quoth Ogden Nash, the celebrated poet who actually hailed from Baltimore. New York, New York, it's my kind of town.
Oh, challenge.
It's on the card, so you can repeat New York.
Doesn't mean you're being challenged, right?
That's exactly it. I heard New York, New York. I woke up, I pressed the buzzer. I hadn't really been listening, you know.
Because of your humorous contribution, you get a bonus point for that one. But you get a point, Giles, for being interrupted. New York, and there are still 43 seconds available starting now.
To New York, I always say thank you so much, New York, because it was on the steps of the New York Public Library.
That's repetition now. It's I think we've had
eight New Yorks. I think that's too many. We did once before, and actually Clement was in the show, and he took me to task on it, because I did actually say, if we have more than five or six New Yorks.
You've only had four, because the full address is New York, New York.
You've actually mentioned New York. You mentioned New York six or seven times.
I won't mention it again, though it is the subject.
It's too late. Benefit of the doubt to Clement. He has the subject, 39 seconds, New York, starting now.
When New York twinned with Totnes, many of us were extraordinarily pleased, proud, and felt encouraged that so small a Devonshire town should have an arrangement of reciprocal crosses.
Obviously, referred records is operative than the real word. Right, Giles, you challenge first.
Yes, combination of hesitation leading to deviation.
We interpret that as hesitation, good. Giles. Right, 24 seconds, New York, back with you, starting now.
It was on the steps of the library in this great city that a beautiful girl who came from Manhattan introduced me to the wonders of the Swiss kiss.
Tony challenged.
How are you spelling that? No, I think that's a deviation.
I was going to explain that she had a slight speech impediment because she had been brought up in Brooklyn.
You shouldn't be making fun of her then.
Yeah.
I wasn't. I was kissing her.
I was saying.
Big breath.
I think if you're going to do things like that, you should establish before you do that that she had the impediment and then do it. Tony, benefit of the doubt.
Thank you very much.
The subject. You have 16 seconds. New York, starting now.
New York was originally New Amsterdam, and they had shop windows with girls in and coffee shops where you could go in and smoke all sorts of illegal substances, and they thought, well, we better get rid of this. Let's make it New York and put a Minster in. And they did that. It was terrifically popular.
So Tony Hawkes was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point for doing so. And Tony, it's also your turn to begin. We'd like to hear from you on the subject of pegs. Tell us something about pegs in this game, starting now.
One of my big banes is the fact that it's such a computerised world we live in now. MPEGs are sent to me on my little thing, which I have on my desk, electronically thing. I've already called it, but...
Giles challenged. You, Giles, you
repetition challenge thing.
Yes, there are too many things there, right? 48 seconds, Pegs, with you, Giles, starting now.
Of all the Pegs I've known, and that includes Mount, Ashcroft, Archer, and various other ladies by the name of Peggy, I suppose my favourite was Peg Balls. She came from a wonderful family of three sisters.
Paul, challenge.
Sorry, isn't that a sexual practice? Isn't it?
Oh, the imagery you create, Paul.
You know all about it, don't you, Nicholas?
Yeah, I know all about that, yes. Have you... Well, at my age, you have to. Right, now, listen... have you a challenge within the rules of Just a Minute?
No, I just heard... I woke up again, heard Peg's balls...
But the audience enjoyed it so much, I think it was so humorous. You get your bonus point for that. Pegs, 34 seconds starting now.
She had sisters, as it happens, called Ophelia and Crystal. But what I remember most about the family was the way that they got together and did the washing of a Monday and took the pegs out of the basket. They were wooden ones and plastic ones. And they got the line and they applied the pegs along the...
Tony, Tony, you challenged.
Well, actually, the audience were quite slow there, weren't they? They suddenly went, oh, there was a joke 15 seconds ago. He did say wooden ones and plastic ones. Repetition
he did
of
indeed,
ones.
Yes. Oh. Wooden ones and plastic ones. So, Tony, a point to you. Pegs, 18 seconds, starting now.
It is said that you can't get a round peg in a square hole, but indeed...
Clement said what?
By whom?
A lot of sages have said that, and a lot of very ordinary people have said it. No, I don't think you can get a... It's a saying that describes a situation, but it's also actually a correct fact. So why did you want to know who said it? Give him a bonus point. That's what he's working for. 13 seconds, Tony, on pegs, starting now.
My favourite kind of pegs are the ones you get in the board game Kriegage. I love playing this, and I do often...
Giles, challenge.
Hesitation.
There was a hesitation. He struggled on his pubic. Yeah. 8 seconds, pegs, with you, Giles, starting now.
When I play the part of Long John Silver, I was offered legs of this kind, and for me to be appearing legless is a bit strange because I do not drink at all, as you can imagine.
Brandith was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's one ahead of Tony Hawkes and two or three ahead of Paul Merton and Clement Freud on equal on the third position. So on my right, they're training a little. On my left, they're going great guns. Paul, would you take the next subject? Elvis impersonators. It's something in your genre, I believe. You admire the man, but talk about them. 60 seconds, as usual, starting now.
That's how Elvis Presley used to speak. And, of course, lots of people make a fortune by impersonating him. He has one of those voices that is quite easy to do, very distinctive, a bit like Tom Jones. Once you've heard it, you know exactly who it is that's singing. Elvis impersonators started to come into their own shortly after the main man himself had died. Suddenly there was a gap in the market. People wanted to hear the old Elvis tunes, but they didn't have Elvis around anymore. New York, New York, New York. So good they named it three times.
But you can't say it three times in this round.
No.
So, Tony, you challenge first.
Yes,
repetition.
Yes.
And there are 31 seconds. Elvis impersonators starting now.
Well, it's one for me.
And
Paul challenge.
Sorry, that was just awful.
It was not only awful, it was a definite hesitation.
Absolutely.
So, Paul, you have the subject back, Elvis impersonators.
I think we should all... I'd like to hear Clement's Elvis impression, I have to say. Maybe gets the subject.
You got in legitimately. He might have get there yet. 29 seconds, starting now.
There was a guy who lived in Swansea who was a Sikh, and he was the Rockin' Turban Elvis. This was back in the 1980s. I remember seeing him. He used to appear on television quite a lot. He was a very funny act. And...
Tony challenge.
Repetition of very...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
The two varies there. 18 seconds. Back with you, Tony. Elvis impersonators starting now.
I like listening to Steve Wright in the afternoon on Radio 2. I know I shouldn't perhaps mention that, but he does have a very good Elvis impersonator on there. There's a little slot called Ask Elvis. And I listen to this, and whoever does it, I don't know who it is. He's quite...
Paul challenge.
A repetition of listen.
Yes, there was. I like to listen to Steve Wright in the afternoon, and you're listening again. 4 seconds you've got in, Paul, on Elvis impersonators starting now.
Undoubtedly my favourite Elvis song.
Clement challenge.
Repetition of song.
was so impressive. The way you buzzed before he said it was fantastic.
He buzzed before he said it. He was determined to get in on this.
The man's in league with the devil.
I think you said we haven't heard from him on this round. He was determined to come in on it.
If Clement can give us an Elvis impression in the last 3 seconds, I'm very happy to hand the subject over.
Give us an Elvis impression.
We haven't got 3 seconds.
We've got 2 seconds.
Yes.
Yeah, do it in 2 seconds. Go on, Clement. Start now.
Here is my Elvis impression.
By the way, Paul gets a point because he was incorrectly challenged. You won anyway because Paul gave it to you. You got the point for that, and you've also got a point for speaking or trying to speak when the whistle went.
And the benefit of the doubt.
No, you didn't. Because you didn't do your impersonation. If you'd done your impersonation, you got a bonus point, but you didn't. You missed out on that one.
Do Eddie Cochran.
But Clement, take the next round. It's early retirement. So, tell us something about that in this game, starting now.
I am hugely in favour of early retirement. I retired from school when I was 8, went to another from which I retired.
Giles Challenge.
Repetition of retired.
Yeah. Yes, because retirement's on the card and not retired. So, Giles, you've got in with 52 seconds on early retirement starting now.
Clement and I both faced early retirement when, as members of Parliament, the people spoke. In my case, on one same day, 65,000 of my fellow citizens got up with one object in mind: get that bastard out. It was a true form of early retirement, but I took it on the chin. The thing that I missed most, of course, was the House of Commons dining room, where the Conservatives sit at one end of the room and at the other sit the Labour Party members.
Paul Challenge.
We had 2 sits.
You did have 2 sits, yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And so Paul listened well. 26 seconds, early retirement starting now.
Well, it seems a very fashionable idea these days. People want to retire early, and I can understand why. If you're involved in the rat race, getting the same train every morning, the 9 to 5, it can be that you get to the age of around 50 and think to yourself, I want to say goodbye to all that. I shall become a penniless tramp. I shall live on the highways.
Tony Challenge.
Two I shalls.
I shalls, you see, that's right. Yes, you say to myself, I shall, and I shall. Definitely don't look like that. I must explain that he's trying to bluff me out of it again, but I was listening and concentrating. 9 seconds, Tony, with you, early retirement starting now.
I've taken early retirement from five-a-side football. I got sick and tired of people coming up to me and pushing me against that wall that was...
Right, so let me give the situation... Tony Hawks is speaking as the whistle went, and he's doing very well. He's in the lead. And you're 3 points ahead... No, 2 points ahead of Giles Brandreth, 3 of Paul Merton, and 4 or 5 of Clement Freud. And, Giles, your turn to begin. The subject is My Favourite Auntie. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
I'm not entirely sure that my favourite auntie was actually my auntie at all. Although we called her auntie and she answered to that name, she was actually a close personal friend of my father's. And I discovered her once in the potting shed, examining succulents and cacti with him. And indeed, she became my favourite auntie because from that day onwards, she gave me the most enormous amount of money on an almost weekly basis, under the promise that I would not reveal the fact that I had discovered her and my darling papa with their hoes and their hands dug deep into the peat together, because she said it would be a cruelty to my dear beloved mama.
Tony Challenge.
I think there was a deer before.
Yes, you had dear, your dear auntie,
it was
yes.
A bit hard.
Also, I didn't want to hear any more.
No. Doesn't seem proper, does it?
You realise a lot of school children listen to this programme. Yeah.
Well, actually, what I was realising is my mother listens to this programme.
Tony, a correct challenge, 21 seconds, my favourite auntie, starting now.
Well, Auntie Pauline will be listening to this, so I should say that she is my favourite auntie. Indeed, the only one that I have, so that's interesting for you. I'm sure you will be thrilled to know that. Auntie...
Clement Challenge.
Repetition of that.
That, yes. 9 seconds, my favourite auntie, starting now.
Thinking back into my family, Auntie Disestablishment Aerialism is the one who springs to mind the longest name, the nicest face,
Giles
the shortest the...
Well, there was a hesitation.
There was a hesitation after you made his clever remark. Oh, and you got in with half a second to go.
We You run a pretty popular game.
Right, so Giles, half a second.
Her true name, I have to tell you, was an extraordinary one.
So Giles was speaking as a whistle when Dandy's increased his position. He's won a... He's just crept up now. He's one behind Tony Hawks, who's still our leader, and they are three or four ahead of Paul Merton and who else is in playing the game? Tony Hawks. Tony Hawks, will you take the next round? The subject is newspaper sellers. Tell us something about them in this game, starting now.
If you think about it, the greatest newspaper sellers are probably celebrities, because without them, would the public really go out and buy these newspapers? I looked at the front page of the Daily Mirror the other day, Rio Ferdinand Love Rat. Could that be important enough to take that place?
Paul Challenge.
His voice has just suddenly changed.
Yes, he's getting on his
deviation from his normal speaking voice.
Tony, you can use whatever voice you like, provided you keep going. And there are another 40 seconds. Newspaper sellers are starting now.
There they are with their little newspaper stands, the newspaper sellers bellowing to the passers-by, the pedestrians going about their everyday business, desperately trying to make them have a purchase of their equipment, the stuff they...
A poor chance.
Desperately making them have a purchase of their equipment.
It's not equipment they've got. They're selling their wares, their product, not their equipment.
We all know I was talking rubbish. Let's so not rub it in.
So, Paul, you've gone into 25 seconds on newspaper sellers starting now.
There used to be a man who stood outside Morton Station every night selling the Evening Standard, and he would bellow, "Yip, yip, yip,
yip!" Chairman Charles.
Repetition.
What of?
You may.
No.
I recognise that voice. It's you, isn't it? No. I would sell newspapers outside Morden Station.
I would say, actually, though it was gibberish, there were not the two same sounds in the gibberish.
That's right.
You know, it's what they used to say. Even if they're not your standard...
Another one now. It's excellent.
That was what the Cockney newspaper sellers used to do outside the theatres.
Oh, really?
You know, when they had the Evening News, the Evening Star and the Standard. Evening Star, not your standard. Mm. Right.
Were you there when the old Queen died?
Yes. Are you talking about theatrical queens or dear monarch? Right. 19 seconds, Paul, with you, newspaper sellers, starting now.
The newspapers are a very difficult business to enter if you don't already own one. Every 24 hours, a new issue has to be produced, and for the poor news...
Clement Challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
Not for a Sunday paper.
Yes, you didn't establish it was a daily paper you were talking about, Paul. So, benefit of the doubt to Clement, and you would last have the subject, Clement. Newspaper sellers, 9 seconds starting now.
I'm very fond of newspaper sellers because they are, if you look at films or listen to radio plays, always shouting out what appears on the front pages.
Right, so it's a very even contest, point-wise, in this particular show. Clement Freud is just training a little. He's 1 point behind Giles Brandreth and Paul Merton, equal in second place. Tony Hawks is just in the lead. Paul, would you take the next round? It's rubies. Tell us something about that precious stone or that lovely girl. 60 seconds starting now.
That's what you put it in my mind. It was no to talk about the stones or the lovely girl. I was confused.
I don't know. You went. So, Tony, you challenge.
Yes, I don't think he said enough about rubies.
No, there was a second and a half there. Rubies is with you, Tony, and 58 and a half seconds starting now.
Of all the girls at my school, Ruby's dress was the finest. Every morning we'd come in, compare all the other ones worn by the other chicks and babes in the playground, but she was quite magnificent in a green outfit that shone so magnificently. How I loved her.
Paul Challenge.
She's got a green shining dress. Was it radioactive? You can't have a dress that shines.
You
can't have a shining dress.
You can have a shining dress.
You can have a shiny
dress. There's a lady over there with a shiny dress.
It shines out, you know.
Does it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You could have had another word which you repeated, but I won't tell you what it was.
Oh, go on.
My job. No, no.
Whisper it.
And then, 39 seconds, still with you on rubies, Tony, starting now.
Imagine the dilemma of Harvey Oswald. Should we let the murder go unpunished, Or should the revenge...
Paul Charles.
We're wandering into that special land again, aren't we? Absolute rubbish.
Paul Benefit. Right, 30 seconds. Rubies, starting now.
Rubies are a wonderful, beautiful stone if you get the chance to collect it. Like the name suggests, it's red in colour. If you hold it up to the light, it can make even the greenest dress look like a beacon of darkness. Shining dresses.
Turn you, Charles.
Truculence and sulking.
Yes, trying to get back at you, but unfortunately hesitating in the process. 19 seconds. Back with you, Tony, on rubies, starting now.
If I was going to buy a ring for somebody, and it could happen in the future, who knows, I would, in fact, purchase a ruby one, because the diamond is not the thing.
Giles, Charles.
We were hesitating.
We were, yes, and you've got rubies, Giles, and you've got 9 seconds starting now.
Rubies are mentioned in the Bible more than any other precious stone. Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum of Dubai.
Clement, Charles.
I didn't believe that.
Yes. It's true.
Well, I'm surprised to hear it.
Well, what are the stones mentioned?
Gold.
No, I'm so sorry.
All the way through the Bible.
According to the Guinness Book of Records, rubies are the most frequently mentioned precious stone in the Bible. Now, gold, of course, is a metal, but it is not a precious stone, which is what I was alluding to. And I was going to explain that Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum...
Right, keep it, because you've justified it. 3 seconds. Rubies with you, Giles, starting now.
He gave some to Princess Badrul Budur, the most precious girl in all the world. She was so lovely.
So Giles was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. They keep changing position rapidly here. Clement's still just in fourth place behind Paul Merton, and he's 2 points behind, 2 points behind Tony Hawkes and Clement Freud. It's your turn to begin. The subject is the best use for chocolate. Tell us something about that substance and that subject in this game, starting now.
I think the very best use for chocolate, if you know someone who is taking early retirement, is to buy an awful lot of the stuff and give it to her in packages and parcels. Hector Blumenthal, who has a very nouvelle cuisine restaurant in Bray on the Thames, and puts chocolate into all sorts of very unexpected things like egg and bacon ice cream with a chocolate sauce. He gives chocolate to...
Giles, Charles.
Quite right.
I think
that was hesitation. Yeah. 32 seconds. The best use for chocolate starting now.
We feed our pussycat Oscar chocolate so that he can sit by the mouse hole with bated breath, because the rats and the wheels that sink inside the hole...
Tony challenged.
Was there a sort of hesitation?
There was a sort of hesitation.
Yeah, I think
enough to give it to you, Tony. And 21 seconds, the best use for chocolate starting now.
I thought Willy Wonka had a smashing idea for chocolate to build a factory out of it.
Paul challenged.
Well, it was Roald Dahl's idea. He wrote the book, didn't he?
He wrote the book, which is a brilliant challenge. We should certainly get a bonus point for that. But let's be fair, Willy Wonka did, in the story, decide to build a chocolate factory. So you have the subject still, but you get a bonus point for your intellectual interruption. And
how dare you!
15 seconds with you, Tony. The best use for chocolate starting now.
There was a quite magnificent episode of The Simpsons in which Bart found himself in Chocolate World. Everything was constructed of this. What a marvellous use that is, I thought as I watched it. But of course it was just fantasy, not real...
So, we are moving into the final round. Oh, what a lovely audience. I hope that means you've really enjoyed it as much as all that. I will give you the situation point-wise as we do that. Clement Freud trailing a little in fourth place, but it's very close. He's only 2 points behind Paul Merton, and he's 1 point behind Giles Brandreth. But out in the lead is Tony Hawkes as we go into the final round, which we're going to ask Giles to begin. I think it's your turn anyway, Giles. The subject is whistleblowing. Tell us something about whistleblowing in just a minute, starting now.
As far as I am concerned, the mistress of whistleblowing is actually in the room with us, one of the loveliest creatures in the world. Her name is Janet Staplehurst. I've had the hots for this whistleblower ever since I first encountered her. I have to tell you, this was not just a cerebral thing. This was also to do with lust. This woman has a body that is quite extraordinary. And an embouchure, when her lovely lips approach that whistle, can I tell you, it sends us all into an erotic frenzy. It's the kind of thing that makes Clement Freud glad that he is still alive. Just on he goes, hoping that he can sit next to this creature of loveliness who is the personification and doesn't need a bodice of any kind. No, she comes with her own natural girdle.
Who will challenge you?
Is this sexual harassment?
It's worship. It's worship.
Is it?
Have you a challenge when the rules are just...
No, I don't, I'm afraid.
You don't.
I wish I had.
You get a bonus point for your interjection there, because the audience loved it. And, Giles, you get a point because you interrupted. You still have whistleblowing, and 20 seconds starting now.
The way she performs her whistleblowing is to be seen to be believed, because the lightness, the subtlety, the way that she does it has erudition and a kind of mystic charm that... Oh.
Tony challenge.
Yes, a kind of.
A kind of, yeah. Kind of, yes.
Repetition.
Well, yes.
Yes. You're getting carried away with your own...
This is quite personal, actually.
I think you're having a little sort of...
I am. And I'm on the beta blockers as well. I don't know how this has happened. I'm so sorry. The Valium will wear off, I know that.
Well, I can endorse what you say.
I know you can. We've been fighting about it for years.
No, you haven't sat next to us as often as I have.
I know I haven't.
I've been beside her for 10 years. I've got every vibe that you've described.
And she's been beside herself for 10 years, too.
And it was a repetition, so it was Tony, you got him first. Whistleblowing, 12 seconds, starting now.
Over the years, Nicholas has had his whistle blown by the best. But I think we all agree this evening we should pay tribute to Janet Staplehurst on her last evening of whistle...
I should explain to our listeners that extra long round of applause was because they're in on the secret. Darling Janet Staplehurst is taking early retirement from the BBC, and this is actually her last show. And so we were sending her off with Giles, with love and aplomb and ecstasy and all the other words, and you have set her forth now with warmth of applause. We were going to miss her deeply. Let me give you the final score in this edition of Just a Minute. Clement Freud finished in fourth place this occasion. Paul Mertner usually does extremely well, finished only in third place. He was 2 points behind Giles Brandreth. Out in the lead with lots of points and lots of points made and lots of points gained was Tony Hawk. So this week we say, Tony, you are our winner. Thank you very much indeed. It only remains for me to say thank you to these four delightful players of the game, Paul Merton and Tony Hawkes and Giles Brandreth and, of course, Clement Freud. And also, again, we thank Janet Staplehurst for the way she's kept the score, not only today, but for over the last 10 years. And we thank our producer-director, Claire Jones. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. We're grateful to this lovely Devonian audience here in the Northcote Theatre in Exeter. From our audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, from our panel, goodbye. Thank you for tuning in, but be with us the next time we play... Just a Minute!
And that was the last in the current series of Just a Minute. Next Monday at 6:30, quote-unquote, returns to BBC Radio 4.